youngsters daft enough to be out here on Christmas Day, too busy stuffing themselves with turkey and drinking themselves under the table. His words conjured up the rich, spicy aroma of warm mulled wine, and this urged Grace onwards. She jumped down from the gate and found herself standing in a patch of sucking mud, deceptively slick. Ben grabbed her elbow, steadied her, and helped her to wade through the bog. Once clear, they all hurried across the field. As they neared the next gate, Bess stopped and began barking, and Ben slowed beside her for a fraction of a second, turning to look behind them. Grace had kept her head down to keep the snow from getting in her eyes, but now she glanced up. Seeing Ben's alarm, she automatically twisted round to follow his stare. Through the snow, she could make out a large, shaggy-haired creature with solid, curved horns. It was ambling towards them. As they watched it, it quickened its pace, some distance away yet, but getting closer much too fast for Grace's liking. Then it broke into a run. Ben shouted, "Oh shit, move now!" He lifted up Bess while she was still barking and practically threw her over the gate. Then he was by Grace's side yelling, "You next, Grace, hurry!" Her heartbeat charged into her ears like the thunderous thud of hooves. Ben's body was now close against hers, his breath warm on the back of her neck as she gripped the top beam. He pushed her, propelling her upwards, and she swung her leg frantically over the top. In her panic, she leaped rather than climbed down, landing in another patch of slippery mud. It took her legs out from beneath her, so that her gloved hands and unprotected face went slap straight into it. As Ben jumped down next to her, she struggled up onto her hands and knees, panting and gasping. Looking behind her, she saw a pair of large round eyes glaring at them through a gap in the gate, the bull snorting air heavily. Bess barked frantically, crouched with her front paws low and her hindquarters high in the air.
"Are you all right?"
Ben squatted beside her. "I'm fine, just filthy." She tried to wipe the hair from her eyes with her dirty gloves, knocking a big glob of muck from her nose as she did so. She looked at Ben, expecting laughter, but instead saw concern. She didn't know where her giggle came from, but it began to bubble out of her until she couldn't stop. Ben looked surprised. Then the creases around his eyes deepened as he joined in. Grace surveyed her mud-splattered coat and jeans. "God, what a state!" she exclaimed, wondering how it was that she was sitting in a field, covered in dirt and snow, feeling the happiest she had been since she'd arrived.
"You should see your face," Ben chuckled.
He offered her a hand, and she took it, pulling herself upright. Their bodies came briefly together, and Ben stepped swiftly away, bending down to reattach Bess's lead.
"Come on, let's go. I need to make a phone call. Then I'll come and join you for lunch."
Grace trudged after him, her mood deflating. Now she was keen to get indoors. Back at the cottage, Annabelle's jaw dropped, and James began laughing when they saw her.
"What the hell happened to you?" Annabelle asked. "Been rolling around in a pigsty?"
"I got chased by a bull," Grace replied, then wished she hadn't, as they both looked at her incredulously, and then at each other, before they dissolved into more streams of mirth. She didn't know why she couldn't join in when she'd found it funny herself at the time. Now she muttered, "Yes, it's hilarious," and headed upstairs to get changed. An hour later, the smell of roasting turkey wafted tantalizingly through the cottage. Grace was feeling much better after a bath and a change of clothes, and Millie had woken refreshed from her nap and was investigating more of her toys. Annabelle was up as soon as she heard the knock at the door.
"I'll get it."
She disappeared into the hallway. Then Grace heard her exclaim,
"Ben!"
as though genuinely surprised to see him. Ben caught Grace's eye as he came in and smiled at her.
"Grace got chased by a bull this morning,"
Annabel told him merrily.
Really?
He raised his eyebrows at Grace, but said nothing more. She was keen to change the subject. Dinner's ready.
I'll give you a hand, Grace, James offered.
As they concentrated on dishing up, Ben sat down on the floor, murmuring softly to Millie as he admired her presence. Annabel joined them and began to tell him about the ball. A few minutes later, Grace and James put four plates of steaming food on the table. Grace strapped Millie into her high chair in front of her own small offering. They took their places and started to eat. James speared a Brussels sprout as he said,
So, Ben, it's been pretty handy for Grace that you've been able to help her get things moving here.
James's tone made Grace look at him sharply. Ben nodded.
Yes, lucky for her and for me. She's kept me from being at a loose end. Annabel tells me that you're house-sitting,
James persisted.
How long will you be here for? Another few weeks,
Ben replied as he poured gravy over his meal.
The owners are due back in early February.
Grace wondered if she would have finished the renovations by then. She imagined living in the village without Ben nearby and was alarmed at how downhearted she felt. Where will you go then? She asked.
Back to Australia. Pick up where I left off.
Annabel took the gravy boat from him.
And where was that?
I work for a small architecture firm in Sydney. I've had some time off for long service, among other things, but it finishes at the end of February.
He sat back, studying them in turn. His eyes fell on James.
So what do you do?
I work for a Swiss bank. James straightened his shoulders as he spoke. And spend most of my spare time on the ski slopes. I can't get enough of it. Don't suppose you have much chance to ski, living in Australia?
Actually, there are some great spots in Victoria,
Ben replied, his arm hooked casually around the back of his chair.
But I live close to Sydney and spend more of my time surfing. I'm lucky enough to have a place near the water. There's something pretty magical about catching waves. I really miss it, actually.
In the silence that followed, Annabel caught Grace's eye, raising an eyebrow almost imperceptibly before she said,
Don't you have man-eating sharks in Australia?
We do,
Ben grinned.
But so far I've been lucky.
He looked at James and Annabel.
So how long are you two staying?
A few days, James said. Grace could have sworn that Annabel tried to bat her eyelashes.
Until New Year's.
Are you keeping an eye on the weather?
Ben asked.
Because it's forecasting snow at any time. You do know this village can easily get cut off in the snow.
Oh, I'm used to snow, James replied with a wave of his fork before he turned to Grace. Do you remember that year we stayed in the Cotswolds and it snowed the whole time? We made that snowman and put Annabel's underwear on it.
Yeah, I remember not talking to you both for the rest of the day,
Annabel added.
That stuff costs a fortune.
Ben has a good point, though, Grace interjected, trying to include him in the conversation. I hope we've got everything we need.
We bought plenty of food yesterday. We'll be fine,
James said confidently.
Anyway, we could get out if we really needed to.
Ben took a sip of his beer.
I wouldn't be so sure about that, mate. Don't underestimate the weather around here. It can make things pretty hairy.
James looked irritated at being contradicted, and Grace tried to lighten the atmosphere.
All the better if they do get trapped in, Ben, because as you know, there's a cellar full of crap below us that needs sorting through.
Ben laughed, while Annabel gave Grace a dirty look.
You've not started that yet, then?
Ben asked.
No, Grace said. It's so bloody cold.
James got up.
You'll have to show me what's down there. Perhaps you'll find something valuable. Who knows? You might be sitting on a gold mine. Anyone else for seconds?
As Grace watched him walk across to the kitchen counter, she thought briefly of the boxes waiting beneath them. Had she missed anything there? She was overtaken by an urgent need to check them again, but shook it off. I doubt there are any hidden gems in the cellar, she said casually, as James came back to the table, his plate replenished. In the attic, maybe, or in here. She gestured around her, trying to quash the sense of disloyalty she felt towards Adam's family while they talked like this. Adam thought the grandfather clock would be worth something. As she spoke, she could hear it ticking steadily in the background, punctuating the conversation. That was the one thing she couldn't wait to be rid of. She remembered it stopping in the dead of night, soon after she'd arrived. Had that been one of her strange dreams? No. She clearly recalled watching as it began working again. That clock is awesome, James said. My aunt and uncle used to have a clock like that, and I loved it when they let me look inside. I wound it up for you earlier. He picked up on Grace's consternation and glanced at the others, puzzled. Was that the wrong thing to do? Ben excused himself soon after the meal, saying he didn't want to leave Bess on her own for too long. Grace and James washed up, then joined Annabelle, who was applauding while Millie pulled a squawking plastic pelican around the room, its broad beak opening and shutting. Shall we play a game or something? Grace asked, looking to Annabelle as it was something of a family tradition. I've got cards. How about hearts? Or spades? Or chase the ace? I'm too tired, Annabelle moaned, and James didn't even reply. Grace was beginning to accept that Christmas was officially over when the phone rang.
Merry Christmas, love, her mother said when Grace picked up the phone. Have you had a nice day?
Grace couldn't help but acknowledge how homesick she felt upon hearing her mother's voice, but she tried to sound cheerful, not wanting her mother to worry. They chatted inconsequentially for a while, telling each other about their days. Then her father came on the line, and after wishing her a Merry Christmas, asked,
So how are you getting on?
Good, Grace replied. I had the kitchen wall knocked down last week.
What on earth did you do that for?
He sounded horrified. As she began to explain, she felt herself stumbling over the words. She knew him too well, and the silence on the other end of the line was a bad sign.
I'm not sure you're fully aware of what you've taken on, Grace,
he said when she'd finished.
These are big jobs. They all take time. Do you really want to be there for months?
Grace felt her hackles rising. I haven't just had the wall knocked down. You should see the amount of clearing out I've done. When that's finished, I'll be able to get on with redecorating.
Well, it's up to you.
She hated the way he did this, his words offering her a choice, while his tone conveyed exactly what he thought.
But remember, after this holiday, you'll be on your own. You can't expect Annabelle to be driving up to see you every 5 minutes.
I don't expect her to, Dad. For goodness sake. I thought you'd rung to wish us a happy Christmas, not have a go at me.
Calm down, love. I am wishing you happy Christmas. I'm simply looking out for you. I don't want you to run into any trouble while you're there on your own.
Well, it feels like you're getting at me, she said grumpily.
I'm not. Now, have you got enough money to be getting on with?
That question couldn't help but make Grace smile. Annabelle and Grace had a joke that even if they became multimillionaires, their dad would still ask them if they had enough, as he had done when they were teenagers heading out for the evening. Yes, I have enough, she said, turning around to see her sister look up and grin. Now, do you want to speak to Annabelle? The rest of the evening passed in a weary haze of wine and television. When Grace climbed into bed, exhausted, she knew she would sleep the night. Except she woke up 3 hours later, sweating, Annabelle motionless beside her in the dark. The answer she'd been searching for earlier was right in front of her. She knew exactly what was troubling her about the cellar.
Chapter 24. Grace crept downstairs, hoping she wouldn't wake James. There was no way this could wait till morning. Despite her fears, she needed to look in the cellar right now. Luckily, James had left the TV on, so the flickering light filtered through the living room door and flashed in staccato bursts on the passage walls. But as she got farther towards the back of the cottage, it became gloomier, the light dwindling to nothing. She ran her hands over the cellar door until she found the handle and pulled it open, hearing it creak. Then she made her careful way down the steps, engulfed in blackness, knowing that once she reached the bottom, she could switch on the light. She was jittery, jumping at every slight noise or rustle, feeling her way along the wall, nearly retreating in panic as something soft brushed against her hand, until she realized it was the belt from her robe. "Stop working yourself up," she scolded herself in a whisper. When she reached the bottom, she felt along the wall and flicked the light switch. The change from total darkness to the stark white light of a bare bulb stung her eyes and left her mind reeling. Grace closed her eyes for a moment, making a conscious effort to slow her breathing, and then opened them again, squinting. Everything was as she remembered, including the bitter cold. She headed straight for the box of Adam's personal effects, the one she knew he had brought with him from London. She began taking things out, pulling feverishly at the contents, piling them on a nearby shelf. This time, she wouldn't be satisfied until she was sure she had checked everything. Towards the bottom of the second box, she found what she was looking for: a small black plastic folder. And inside it was Adam's passport. She pulled it out and opened the purple booklet to double check. There was his picture. The one that Grace had always laughingly told him looked like a police mugshot. She stared at Adam's handsome face. A rush of tenderness weakened her legs, and she held onto a shelf to stop them from buckling. At last. This was evidence, surely, that he hadn't intended to run away. Or at least it made it less likely. But if that were so, then other possibilities, some unbearable, edged closer to being true. Her mind swirling, she whirled around. James was standing silently behind her. She squealed with fright. "What the hell are you doing?" she shrieked. "What the hell are you doing?" he shouted back. Barefoot and bleary-eyed, he was brandishing a large piece of wood. "For Christ's sake, Grace, you scared the life out of me. I woke up to a bloody door creaking, and then heard all this scraping and rustling. After what Annabelle's been telling us, I was terrified I was about to confront the headless horseman rummaging about down here." He laughed, but when Grace didn't join in, he immediately sobered up. "What's wrong?" She shook the passport at him. "They asked me to find this last year, when they were suggesting that Adam had run away, and I couldn't. But I didn't know the bloody cellar existed then, did I? It suddenly dawned on me that I never checked the boxes he put here. Perhaps the police will take his absence more seriously now, though I somehow doubt it." She dropped her arm despondently. "Grace." James began to rub his bare arms as he stood there in t-shirt and boxer shorts. "Come upstairs and we'll talk about this. It's freezing down here." He held out a hand. She went across and took it, and he began to lead her towards the stairs. "Hang on," she said. "We have to turn off the light." He waited as she flicked the switch, then they edged slowly back up in the darkness. Once in the corridor, Grace dropped his hand and closed the door gently, trying to stop it from creaking. James followed her down the hallway, but when she began to climb the stairs, heading back to bed, he said, "Grace, wait a minute." She tried to look at him, though she could barely make out his face. "Come and sit with me for a moment." She went into the living room with him. He pulled her onto the sofa and unzipped his sleeping bag, covering them both with it. "Lean on me for a while. Let yourself relax." Grace did as he bid, and felt her eyes grow heavy. The next thing she knew, She had woken up with James asleep next to her, his arm still around her. Quietly, she disentangled herself and got up. James stirred briefly as she kissed his forehead and whispered, "Night," before tiptoeing from the room. Out in the hallway, the grandfather clock greeted her with its steady tick. The thought of its stopping sent her hurrying upstairs, without looking to see what the time was, and falling gratefully into bed next to Annabelle. Grace was woken again after what felt like just 5 minutes, to the sound of Millie crying. Grey light was beginning to poke through the curtains, but inside the cottage it was dim. She found Millie sitting up cuddling Mr. Pink, and Grace only needed one look at her wide-eyed, tear-streaked face to know that Millie wouldn't be comforted back to sleep. She lifted her little girl out of the crib, trying to stave off her own tiredness by blinking hard and rubbing her eyes. They began to play together on the floor by the crib, but after a while Millie grew restless. Grace picked her up and tiptoed downstairs to get breakfast, trying not to wake James.
"What time is it?"
James asked from the depths of the sofa. "Too early," Grace muttered, then walked back out to check the grandfather clock, only registering the silence as she did so. "The clock stopped," she said anxiously. The hands were pointing to just past 3.
"It must be stuck. I'll look at it later,"
James mumbled sleepily. "Thanks." Grace went over to her mobile phone on the tabletop. "It's nearly 8 o'clock," she said, surprised. Then she pulled back the curtain and looked out.
"And I think you could say that we're snowed in."
She heard the sofa's springs creak as James pushed himself up. Then he was behind her, peering through the window.
"Bloody hell!"
The garden had disappeared. It looked as though someone had laid a sparkling white blanket from the level of the low garden wall right up to the cottage. The only things poking through were the tips of the taller hedges and the bare trellis arch midway along the path.
"I'll have to dig us out," James declared. "Have we got a spade somewhere?"
I don't know," Grace said. "I didn't think about it." James made a noise of exasperation.
"Do we actually need to go outside?" Grace queried. "Unless you're going to shovel your way right over the top of the moors, I think it's safe to say we're stuck."
In reply, James threw himself onto a chair. "What's the problem?" Grace asked, amused. "You're always talking about how much you love the snow."
"Yes, because in Switzerland I can ski on it," James grumbled. "It's completely different."
"You could take Millie sledding instead."
"Well, we can't do anything much until we get down the path."
James began to pull on his jeans and a sweater.
"I'll search around and see what I can find."
"Be my guest." Grace felt annoyed as she carried Millie across to the kitchen area and sat her in the high chair. James always had to make big issues out of little problems. Adam would have found it the perfect excuse to cuddle up in front of the television. She briefly wondered whether Ben would be shoveling snow right now. Daylight had finally conquered the night by the time Annabelle appeared downstairs.
"What's that noise?"
she asked, tuning into a recurring scraping sound. Grace went across to the window and pulled back the curtain. James found a shovel, so he's clearing the path. "I'm not sure why, but he obviously thinks it's important."
"Wow!"
Annabelle stared out of the window.
"I don't think I've ever seen so much snow."
She spun around, beaming.
"Let's get our coats on and make snowmen all day, Millie."
She ruffled her niece's hair and was delighted when Millie looked up and grinned at her. Grace laughed at them both.
"Sounds great, but can you give me some help first?"
Annabelle's eyes narrowed.
"Don't look at me like that. Last night I remembered I hadn't checked the boxes in the cellar for Adam's passport, and so I took a look and, sure enough, I found it."
"Really? Why on earth did he put it down there?"
"I don't know. I wish he'd told me about the damn cellar in the first place. I have no idea why he didn't."
Maybe he thought you knew about it, Annabelle suggested, shrugging. No, actually, he lied about it, Grace snapped, surprising herself with the ferocity of her reply. And so I want it emptied while you two are here to help. It's too creepy to do it on my own.
I don't believe you sometimes,
Annabelle muttered, flinging herself onto a chair.
Some Christmas holiday this is turning out to be. Well, I'm sorry, but you can count me out. It's bloody freezing, and I bet there are rats down there. Get James to bring up the boxes.
It won't take long, Grace insisted. And you can sit at the top and sort out the stuff. We'll get through it in no time if we all pitch in. A few hours later, Grace felt like she was corralling unruly sheep. Annabelle and James had agreed to help, but both would slip away endlessly. James to check on the football scores, Annabelle for any reason that would avoid the task at hand. At least when Millie got up, it meant that her enthusiastic auntie was happy to keep her entertained, leaving Grace free to go through things. By mid-afternoon, there were piles of full boxes and large bags destined for either the garbage or a charity shop. The cellar was now rimmed with bare, grimy shelves. Okay, Grace conceded when she took stock of how much they had done. Let's take a break.
Finally, she lets us rest.
James sat down heavily on the stairs and leaned against the wall.
Let me tell you this before I forget, Annabelle said.
She patted the three boxes in front of her.
These look like they contain personal effects, letters and the like, so you'd better go through them. It's strange that they weren't in the attic with the rest.
Perhaps Connie and Bill got too old to clamber about in the attic, Grace replied, opening one of them and rummaging inside, finding exercise books, notebooks, more photograph albums, newspaper clippings, and loose paper all mishmashed together. She sighed.
There's so much of this stuff. I've got no idea why they held on to this.
God, it's never ending, she thought, and had a renewed rush of determination to harden her heart and plough through the swathe of papers. She needed to feel she was getting somewhere.
If I take these upstairs, can you two entertain Millie for a while? She asked them. Anything, if it keeps me away from those damn boxes, Annabelle replied, while James added,
sure. When Grace got into her room, she lifted the boxes one by one and tipped their contents onto the bed covers, knowing that if she had to clear them away before she could go to sleep tonight, it would make her work faster. She climbed up to sit amid the chaotic mountain of papers and began rifling through them. Anything she wasn't interested in got tossed back into an empty crate, and she began to stack the rest in piles by her bedside, next to her neglected copy of Rebecca. Her spirits sank as the collection of papers she wanted to look at more closely grew larger. Bundles of letters, mainly. Notepads that had been scribbled in. Bank statements that she didn't feel she could throw away without checking. Old greeting cards. Photos, both in albums and loose. And a couple of school yearbooks that might well contain something about Adam. As she was going through them, it became clear that at least one of the boxes had contained Rachel's effects. It made her think of Connie and Bill facing the same task, whittling down their daughter's belongings to retain the official documents that proved her existence and the photos and letters that could help them recapture Rachel, even if only for a moment, as her image or words briefly fleshed out the spectre of her from the confines of memory. For all Grace knew, so many other things she had touched in the past few weeks had secrets of their own to tell, but they had died along with their keepers. All Grace could do was unwittingly dispose of the evidence. She picked up a bundle of letters. They were written in the same handwriting, and she plucked one from the top and opened it. Without knowing the contents, she couldn't determine their value, but she still felt as though she was snooping.
Dear Mum and Dad, I hope you're both all right. I know you will still be getting over the shock, but please, please keep writing and telling me your news. I'm doing fine in York. I found a flat, and there's plenty of space for the baby, who is kicking me all the time now. It's a strong little thing, that's for sure. When you see Meredith, please could you tell her that I'm sorry I didn't say goodbye. I've included a letter for you to pass on to her. I miss you all very much. I know it's hard, but I'm sure I'm doing the right thing. Why don't you come and see us when the baby arrives? All my love, Rachel.
Grace plucked the next one from the pile.
Dear Mum and Dad, it's good to hear that they have fixed the road. It's hard enough driving up the bank without potholes to avoid. I'm glad to hear that the show went well too, Mum. I'm sure you did a brilliant job of organising it. The whole city is talking about the Viking house found under the old Cravens factory. We went for a walk over there yesterday, but there's not much to see at the site. Plenty of people trying to have a look, though. Thanks for the money, but please don't feel you have to keep sending it. I'm doing fine on Social Security, and I have earned a bit more doing some casual typing work. Finally, all those hours practicing are paying off. It's good work, because I can do it when Adam sleeps. I'm lucky that at the moment he's a good sleeper in the day, though he keeps me up all night long sometimes. I can't wait for you to meet him. Come and see us soon. All my love, Rachel.
Grace stared out of the bedroom window at the wintry afternoon twilight. From the letters, it sounded as though Connie and Bill had been trying to support their daughter, however upset they must have been when she had run away pregnant. It was strange, seeing Rachel's handwriting, trying to imagine her in a tiny flat in York, caring for a new baby while working to make ends meet. Grace had conjured up Rachel so vividly that she felt a strong bond with the woman. However, these letters reminded Grace that she didn't really know anything about the flesh and blood person who had written them, the woman whose clothes Grace and Annabelle had danced in. Grace glanced at a few more pages to find that they contained similar themes. She would have to go through them one at a time, but it could probably wait. It seemed unlikely that Johnny's name was going to come up. Grace wasn't even sure how much Adam's grandparents had known of the boy who had gotten their daughter into trouble. But presumably, since Johnny had emigrated, there wasn't a lot left to say, and everyone would have had no choice but to move on. She sat for a while, considering what to do next. If she didn't uncover any evidence of Johnny among these papers, she was going to have to look at other options. She could try to call the library tomorrow, but suspected it would be closed for the Christmas holiday. Deep in thought, she went down the stairs and discovered Millie holding a biscuit in each hand, a half-empty packet on the table. "She won't eat her dinner now," Grace said jokingly as she stroked Millie's hair.
"Oh, sorry, I didn't think of that."
Annabelle put the packet on one side.
"Listen, I was wondering about going to see Meredith while we're snowed in. If I give her a call, maybe James can dig me up as far as the schoolhouse so I can interview her. What do you reckon?"
Excuse me, I don't know about that,"
James interrupted.
"Have you seen how high the snow is?"
"It'll be better in the morning,"
Annabelle replied confidently. "Fine by me," Grace said. "In fact, I might come with you." A new awareness reinvigorated her. There was another way to learn more about Johnny after all. It was Meredith who had been able to tell her the most about him so far. Perhaps if Grace pressed her further, she might remember more. Grace couldn't help but feel that locating Johnny was pivotal, that if she found him, she would find answers. As her mind slowed, she became aware of the room again and noticed that they were accompanied by a steady ticking.
"Did you fix the clock?"
She looked at James. He appeared confused.
"No, I forgot all about it."
Grace turned to Annabelle, who shook her head. She stiffened, then walked out into the hallway. The pendulum was swinging steadily back and forth. Grace's head began to throb. "When did it start again?" she asked, as she came back into the living room. Annabelle shrugged, and James said, "I didn't notice, sorry." Grace glanced at her watch and frowned. "It's telling the right time."
"Perhaps it hadn't stopped after all," James suggested.
"You do remember it stopping, don't you?" Grace pressed him.
"Yeah, I think so."
But he didn't look sure. "Think, James, do you or don't you?" She saw James exchange a look with Annabelle before he answered,
"Don't worry, Grace. I'll remember."
Chapter 25. Grace held the phone to her ear, irritated that she'd been placed on hold for over 5 minutes now. She was about to give up when a voice said,
"I'm sorry, Constable Barton is on holiday until New Year's, unless it's an emergency."
"No," Grace said miserably. "It can probably wait." She felt incredibly frustrated as she hung up. However, she had one more option. She searched around for the scrap of paper Niall had given her and dialed the number.
"Hello?
Niall, it's Grace. Grace Lockwood?"
"Grace, how are you?"
He sounded surprised to hear from her. "Fine. I'm sorry to ring you over the holidays, but I need your advice." Her foot began tapping out a nervous tick as she talked. "I just tried to ring Constable Barton, but he's away till after New Year's, and I don't want to sit on my hands till then. A few things have happened over the last few days, concerning Adam's disappearance."
"Go on."
Niall sounded intrigued. "Well, first of all, I went to the Christmas Eve ball at Freeborough Hall, and an old friend of Adam's came up to me and said she had seen him in the library at Octon the day before he disappeared. Apparently he told her he was looking for his dad. Adam's father was a man called Johnny Templeton. He abandoned Adam's mother when she got pregnant and moved overseas with his family, so I thought that might be significant." She took a deep breath. "And then I found his passport, down in the cellar. Adam had put some boxes there when we moved in, and one of them had his passport in it."
"Didn't the police search there last year?"
Niall asked. "It was locked, and I thought it was only a cupboard back then. I think one of the men that conducted the search asked me for the key, but I didn't know where to find it."
"Well, I'm amazed. They shouldn't have overlooked that."
Grace furrowed her brow. Surely that was beside the point. "It doesn't matter now. I just want to know if this changes anything. With the investigation." She was acutely aware of the silence on the other end of the line.
"Doesn't this give us some new leads?"
she pleaded. There was a tiny note of hysteria in her voice. She could hear it.
"I'm not sure. Look, you need to talk to Barton. And if the woman you spoke to can come down to the station too and tell them the same thing she told you, that'd be the best way of getting their attention."
Grace's optimism disappeared. "I'm not sure she will. She said she hadn't come forward earlier because she doesn't want to be involved."
"Is that right? And did she say why?"
The suspicion was clear in his voice.
"No."
"Grace, perhaps you should think about your loyalty to this woman. She can talk to the police in confidence. No one else needs to know."
"In that case, I'll speak to her again, see what she says."
"Right then."
Niall sounded as though he were about to hang up.
"Isn't there anything else we can do?"
Grace was aware of how desperate she sounded, and she hated it. Against her will, she was getting sucked back into the emotional turmoil of the last year. She heard him sigh.
"Remind me of Adam's father's name again."
"Jonathan, Johnny, Templeton. I think he grew up on a farm around here."
"Well, I'll see what I can find out, Might not be for a few days.
Fine, Grace said dejectedly. Thank you. When she came off the phone, she headed downstairs to rejoin the others. Millie was playing with her favourite stacking blocks, while James and Annabelle were bickering about what to watch on television. Being cooped up wasn't suiting them very well.
I just asked Niall's advice about the passport, she said.
He didn't sound that interested, which was pretty much what I expected. She sat down, trying hard to suppress her exasperation.
Adam didn't simply disappear, I'm sure of that. But I have no idea what happened. How am I ever going to get to the bottom of it?
With fumbling fingers, she angrily wiped away the tears before they had a chance to fall.
Now listen to me, Grace, Annabelle said, coming across and putting an arm around her sister. This place is no good for you. It's going to drive you insane. You can't spend your time obsessing about Adam, because, for whatever reason, he's gone. And there's no sign at all that he's about to come back.
James and I will have to head off soon. Annabelle hesitated and looked at James, who nodded. Grace sat, waiting for the inevitable.
We think you should come with us, James said.
We can't leave you up here all alone, Gracie. It's not right at all. It would feel like abandoning you. And this place is far too, well, remote,
he finished.
Mum and Dad are really worried about you, Annabelle added.
Grace ran a hand through her hair.
Look, I know you're saying this because you love me, but I need to finish what I've started. It won't take long.
Annabelle leaned back and blew out a long, frustrated breath.
Grace, this village is sucking the life out of you. You're so serious all the time.
Grace had had enough. She stood up.
I don't think it's this place, actually. I think I sobered up a bit when my husband disappeared on me and my child.
She went across to Millie and picked her up to cuddle her, upset when Millie screamed and struggled until she was put back down.
Grace, listen to us,
James insisted.
You and Millie need looking after, and there's no chance of that while you live up here.
Annabelle's right. This isn't good for you.
Where's the fun-loving girl we used to know, who could barely stand a day without going somewhere different or trying something new? Just look at yourself right now.
I wouldn't be feeling like this if you two could start supporting me instead of antagonizing me, Grace retorted.
And I think you've forgotten that I have a baby now. Much more has changed in my life than just my location. Besides, you live in Switzerland. I'll never see you, James, even if I do move back to London. What kind of support is that?
I'm thinking of moving back, he replied.
Oh. She looked at him, unsure of what to say. They were getting completely sidetracked.
Listen, I'm not isolated, she said testily, trying to get the discussion back on course. I've got Ben and Meredith and Claire and Emma.
Annabelle threw her hands up in the air.
For God's sake, Grace, you hardly know any of them.
They all glared at one another.
I'm going for a walk,
Grace told them defiantly. Annabelle shook her head, then turned away.
Of course you are, Grace. That's your solution for everything nowadays.
Grace was already on her way out.
Just mind Millie for me,
she called irritably over her shoulder. I won't be long. By the time she reached her front gate, she could feel the tears streaking down her face. Why did everyone she loved want to make things so much harder? James and Annabelle's attitude was really getting to her. Life wasn't always about taking the easy option. Sometimes there were things that needed to be done. She stomped up the road, the hardened snow crunching under her feet, until she reached Feathery Jack's place. The chimney was puffing as usual, and in the front garden, two small barn owls sat together on one perch, They barely moved, only the occasional twist of their heads signalling that they were alive. Sturdy leather straps were looped around their legs, and Grace felt sorry for them. She walked closer to the fence, glancing at their heart-shaped faces, their speckled breasts, the sharp hooks of their talons. The pure white among their dappled feathers stood out against the greying crust of snow.
"Come on over then, lass."
The voice came from the doorway, and then a gaunt old man appeared, beckoning her closer. His face was a scrunch of wrinkled skin, beneath tufts of white hair. He wore a tweed jacket a few sizes too big for him, and his trousers were tied tight around his ankles with string. A pipe dangled from his mouth, jiggling up and down as he moved. He came across and opened the gate for her, and she followed him towards the owls.
"Stroke her on her belly, like."
He looked expectantly at Grace. She tentatively touched the owl's soft feathers. Its beak looked razor sharp, but the owl sat stoically and didn't move. She stood back. "I'm Grace. I live at Hawthorne Cottage." He gave no indication that he'd heard her. Instead, he went back into the cottage for a moment, then came out holding something small, which he offered to one of the owls. It was snatched in an instant from his outstretched fingers. As the bird gripped the item in its talon and began to tear at it, Grace saw it was a dead mouse. She watched as skin was ripped away to reveal raw red flesh, feeling revolted.
Thank you, she said after a while, unable to bear it any longer.
The old man didn't even acknowledge her, heading back towards his cottage again. She let herself out through the gate, unsure whether to go home to try and make peace or carry on walking. As she wavered, the door to the red brick house opened and Ben emerged with Bess on a lead. He raised a hand when he saw her and then did the same to Jack, who was heading back across his garden. The old man called,
"Now then,"
as he offered the second owl a dead mouse.
"I was going to come and see you later," Ben said as he drew near,
"to find out when you want to start work again on your cottage." Grace smiled. "As soon as possible, but I think I need to wait until the others have left. It's far too crowded in there at the moment." Her face or voice must have reflected her downcast thoughts as Ben asked,
"Everything all right?"
"No," she said. "Not really." She bit back the tears, feeling foolish, not wanting to cry in front of him.
"Would you like to take a walk with me and Bess? You don't have to talk if you don't want to. We'll just keep you company."
"That would be good, though I can't leave Millie for too long."
"Don't worry, we weren't going far anyway. Perhaps we won't go through the fields this time, eh?"
As she laughed despite herself, she saw the lines around his eyes deepen as he grinned. They were only gone for half an hour, but Grace felt so much better on her return to the cottage. They had walked in silence for a while. Then Ben had begun to talk about the plans for the renovations, what they should do next. She had confessed her worries about the time it might take, and he had reassured her, saying that once they got started and she could see it all unfolding, she'd feel a lot better. When she got home, however, her mood came crashing down again. Millie was fractious and clung to her. Annabelle took herself upstairs while James fixed them all lunch. Grace tried to talk to him, but he gave her one-word answers, and she could feel the anger radiating from him, even though his back was turned. She wondered if he was still upset at their earlier disagreement, but whatever it was, nothing could shake him out of it. In the evening, after Millie had gone to bed, they got out a deck of cards and went through the motions, but no one had their heart in playing. Grace tried to tell them about her encounter with Feathery Jack and his owls, but could see they weren't interested. She was debating whether she could excuse herself for bed at 8 o'clock without inviting a barrage of sarcasm when, without warning, they were plunged into blackness.
What the hell?
Annabelle cried. I've seen the fuse box down in the cellar. Grace sighed, thinking that it was the perfect end to the day. I'll get a flashlight and check it out. I'll come with you, she heard James say. And then there came the sound of his chair scraping along the floor as he stood up. Grace collected the flashlight, and they made their way to the cellar. She went gingerly down the steps, feeling James close behind her. At the bottom, she directed the beam towards the wall, shining it along until she located the box. Right, she said. The switch should be in there.
Wait a minute, Grace,
James said. She swung around and he took the flashlight from her. She briefly made out his eyes in the dim light, the contrast between the white sclerae and dark irises. Then she felt his fingers brush her cheek, and his lips were pressing against hers. Grace was stunned. James took this as a welcome sign and dropped the flashlight, hands cupping her face now, kissing her harder. As he wrapped his arms around her, pressing her into him, her body began to crave this physical contact, and she collapsed against him, kissing him back. He was so solid, so reassuring. In the dark, it might not be James. It could be anyone. And the tremble that ran through her had a thrill of desire in it. She was dissolving, becoming a million tangled threads of sensation, when the light snapped back on. And something else clicked into place in her head. James opened his eyes as Grace watched him with the horrible realization that their friendship had just turned in on itself. She saw the small flicker of his eyes trying to reach her, searching for somewhere he might comfortably settle within her gaze, and the dull veils of disappointment that descended as he found none. His whole body seemed to pull itself into a stiffer pose with one enormous effort of will, and he bent down to pick up the dropped flashlight. Grace knew they had just lost something between them that might never be found again. Come on. He headed for the stairs without looking back, and she followed him. Upstairs, Annabelle looked bemusedly at both their faces.
What happened?
The lights came on before we even touched the box, Grace said.
Really?
Annabelle glanced around.
Perhaps this cottage does have a ghost after all, switching the lights on and off and stopping and starting the clock.
Don't say that. Annabelle saw Grace's face and laughed.
Come on, I was joking. Don't get paranoid on me. Now, where were we?
James picked up his cards, took a brief look at them, and threw them back on the table.
I'm done, he said. Think I'll have an early night. It's time I went home. I've got a long drive tomorrow.
Annabelle stared at him in astonishment, then at Grace for an explanation. Grace pursed her lips and glanced away. They left James buried under a duvet on the sofa and went up to bed. They both got ready in silence, and then Grace put out the light. She lay there, knowing Annabelle was awake.
Something happened between you two just then, Annabelle said.
Grace didn't reply.
You're all over the place, Grace. You have to make up your mind what you want before we can help you.
Grace heard Annabelle roll over and gathered that was her sister's way of saying goodnight. Chapter 26. James was up and ready to leave by the time Grace headed downstairs with Millie the next morning. She put Millie on the floor and then looked at him, weighing up how much she dared to say.
Don't leave like this, she pleaded.
James came across to her and stroked her cheek, his face so forlorn that it made her want to cry.
It's been lovely spending Christmas with you, Grace,
he said.
But nothing's ever going to change, is it?
He knelt on the ground next to Millie.
Bye, little lady.
Millie crawled rapidly over to Grace and clung to her mother's leg.
I'm always here for you,
he told her fiercely, getting to his feet. He picked up his bags and walked towards the door.
Say goodbye to Annabelle for me.
And then he let himself out. Grace stood by the door, using all her strength to resist the urge to follow him. She knew it would be for her own comfort, and would intimate to James that she wanted something more than his friendship. It wasn't fair to do that to him. So she listened to his car starting up and driving off, the engine noise getting fainter and fainter until it petered out. Then she sat down, feeling bereft, studying the frost that had formed intricate patterns on the window. Annabelle appeared moments later.
Has James gone already?
She asked in surprise.
I heard his car.
Grace nodded. He said to say goodbye. Annabelle had softened this morning. She perched on the arm of Grace's chair.
What happened?
He tried to kiss me last night.
Really? I thought he was over all that.
She leaned back and blew out her breath. They sat without speaking for a little while. Then Annabelle sprang up.
Jeez, how could I have been so stupid? I'm running through so many things in my head right now and seeing them differently.
Really? Grace asked. Like what?
Well, like yesterday, for one. He followed you outside a few minutes after you left and came back in looking really annoyed, saying he'd seen you walking off with Ben.
Grace felt obliged to explain. I met him when I went out, and he offered to walk with me. Annabelle said nothing in reply. Grace couldn't decipher her expression.
Belle, are you interested in Ben?
Annabelle looked at her, amused.
Of course not, she said. He's just the most handsome bloke around here to have some fun with. Anyway, he lives in Australia. Grace, I'm all for long-distance romance, but that's taking it a bit far.
They were interrupted by a loud crash. James marched into the living room, leaving the front door wide open, an icy blast of air rushing through the cottage. His face was an angry red.
The road is coated in black ice. The bloody car keeps skidding on the damn hill. I can't even get out of this sodding place.
You'll never get past the schoolhouse, Annabelle said. It's really steep.
There was a rap on the door, and a moment later Ben poked his head into the living room.
I heard you having trouble out there, mate,
he said, looking at James.
Can I give you a hand? If you're able to turn the car around, I'll tow you up this way. It's not as steep. You can still get onto the motorway. It's just a bit of a longer way round.
James muttered a curse and stormed out again. Ben looked across at the two women in confusion and then followed James. Annabelle went over to the window, Grace behind her. Soon after the men disappeared, they heard the distant noises of engines, then saw Ben's Land Rover go past, closely followed by James' rented Passat, both men staring grimly ahead.
Poor James,
Annabelle said, one eyebrow raised, and then collapsed in laughter. Grace joined in, but it felt more like a necessary release than true mirth. When Annabelle sobered, she patted Grace's arm.
Don't worry, Grace. He'll be fine. He loves you too much just to disappear out of your life.
Annabelle hadn't seen his crushed expression last night, Grace thought, but she hoped her sister was right. Then she registered what Annabelle had said. He loves you too much just to disappear out of your life. Had Adam not loved her enough? When all was said and done, was that it? Should she be trying to come to terms with it and move on, rather than dredging through the past like this? It would mean letting go of her faith in him. Was she ready to do that? What if one day, against all the odds, he reappeared, and after he explained, she would understand? but she didn't really believe it would happen. Such ideas might release her fears for a while, but in the long term she was binding herself to empty promises. Because if she really knew Adam as well as she thought, then the only reason he wouldn't come back was if he couldn't. Chapter 27. By the time they walked up to the schoolhouse to see Meredith, the snow had receded to the point where they could crunch through it in their Wellingtons, but now it glittered with crystals, forming patches of slick ice, and it took them twice as long to reach the gravel drive as it had done the last time. Grace was glad they had taken Millie in the stroller, as it was slightly less precarious than carrying her. Meredith definitely agreed to this. "Relax, Grace. She was fine about it," Annabel replied, trudging along next to her. Before they'd even turned off the road, they could hear children squealing. As they watched, three boys raced into view, padded out in thick coats, hats, scarves, and gloves. They stopped their chase for a moment, gaping at Grace and Annabel. "Is your grandma here?" Grace asked, at which the youngest boy came over, took her by the hand, and pulled her along towards the side of the house, leaving Annabel and Millie behind.
"No,"
Grace said in protest, having to run to keep up.
"I think she'd rather we knocked."
But the child just giggled, and then burst through a door into a large kitchen. For a brief moment, Grace hoped she might be able to sneak out again, but a couple she had never seen before had abruptly curtailed their conversation and turned to stare.
"Sorry,"
Grace said, as the boy who had brought her disappeared through another door.
"I was looking for Meredith."
"Ah," said the woman, coming forward with her hand outstretched.
"You must be Annabel. Mum said you were coming. I'm Veronica, her eldest, and this is my husband, Steve."
Veronica was wearing jeans and a sweater, but Steve was in a suit and tie, as though he had just come from work. As he came across to shake Grace's hand, Meredith's dog Pippa barged through the inner door. The animal flew across the room, jumping up at Grace and sending her staggering backwards beneath its weight. Grace tried to catch the dog's paws to steady herself, but she was pushed out of the kitchen door, into the garden, landing with a thump on the snow. Annabel rounded the corner with Millie, as Steve rushed outside and grabbed the dog's collar.
"Pippa, come here,"
he ordered, leading her back indoors.
"Are you all right?"
Veronica asked apologetically, offering Grace a hand up.
"I'm sorry. Bobby shouldn't have let her out."
"I'm fine," Grace said when she was on her feet, dusting herself off. "I'm Grace. This is Annabel." She looked towards Annabel to find that her sister was almost doubled up laughing and gave her a pretend scowl. "And this is my daughter, Millie." Millie was leaning forward in the stroller, her mouth hanging open as she looked between her mother and the door where the dog had disappeared.
"Come on in," Veronica said. "We'll give Mum a shout. Hasn't this weather been awful? Mind you, it keeps the kids busy. They've been out playing in it all day."
Once they were inside, Steve pointed to an open bottle of wine.
"Can I get you both a drink?"
"One of those would be lovely," Annabel agreed. "Water's fine for me, thanks," Grace said. "Did you all have a good Christmas?"
"Great, great,"
Veronica replied.
"The snow's made it difficult to get back to Octon, so we've been staying here. I don't think Mum was banking on us all being here for so long, but she's coping very well."
"She loves it,"
Steve said.
"I've given her a shout. She'll be here in a second."
At that moment, Meredith appeared.